Welcome to the Fabric Podcast and our conversation, Enough. Enough can feel like it's always just out of reach, and that persistent voice of capitalism seems to tell us to keep reaching for a little more money. In this episode, Greg Meyer has a conversation with Grace Pomeroy about enough money.
Enough. What is it? In your life, in our world, are you enough? One thing we need to be clear about is that being enough is not a measure of your worthiness, your accomplishments, your perfection. Being enough isn't about the color of your skin, whether you're black or brown or white. It's not about being indigenous, immigrant, citizen, LGBTQ+, or straight. Being enough is a matter of your humanity. Life is sacred. Dante Wright was enough. We live under the shadows here in Minneapolis, as do people around the world. The death of George Floyd right here in our neighborhood just over a year ago, and now the trial of Derek Chauvin. And then on Sunday we heard about the death of Dante Wright. There is no question that it should not have happened. All the other questions swirling around it, of whether it was an accident or not, should traffic stops like this one, which resulted in his being killed, be happening or not. There are questions about the profiling of non-white people as potential criminals. There's the systems and policies and laws that need to be changed so that lives aren't seen as expendable, not enough, not sacred. Those are all such important questions, and they must be answered. Justice depends on it. Lives depend on it. Nonetheless, in the meantime, we sit with the pain of a life that was enough, that was sacred, that was worthy of love and was loved, and that is now gone. It takes our breath away. As a community, as fabric, people who seek to weave together, not pull apart, our truest selves with one another in the world, and that which sees and understands what the pattern of the fabric we're all part of is all about, we mourn and we breathe. Enough is a strange thing. We said last week that enough is even behind the racial injustice experienced today. As some seek to have enough, they find that one of the easiest ways to get it is to deprive it from others, or to use others to procure enough for oneself. Enough does that to us. It likes to trick us into believing that if we could just get more, we would have enough, and we never do. There's no place this is more true than it is in this most tangible part of our lives of money. Money meaning the dollars and cents, as well as our wealth in general, and also our possessions. You know, all that stuff we use our money to provide for us. It's hard not to struggle with money and its power over us. I hope you've experienced a positive side of enough in relationship to your money. If you did, it probably wasn't because you won the Powerball, but because you were enjoying life despite how much you had or didn't have. Or some simple purchase or donation, it just made you happy. It felt good. It was in some way the right thing just then.
Thanks so much, Greg. It's so exciting to be able to chat with Fabric folks. I was a part of the Fabric community for a little while, a few years ago, and I have so much respect for that community that has been cultivated and for the people there. My name is Grace Pomeroy, and I am the director of the Stewardship Leaders Program at Luther Seminary. And what that means is that I do financial wellness coaching and cultivation with our students. So I help them increase their financial wellness before they go out into the world to serve the church in whatever capacity that is. And I also walk beside church leaders and congregations to help them think about generosity and how money functions in their congregation differently. And in my side work, I do financial education and coaching with couples. So money is a deep part of my life and my professional life as well. It's something that I've thought a lot about personally, and particularly that integration between our faith and the way that we use our money.
Yeah. Well, you know, if someone would have told me when I first became a pastor that I was going to be spending a lot of time and energy helping people figure out how to live with their money, I just plain would have laughed. But as it turns out, I did, and it's because money is actually one of the biggest spiritual issues in our lives. And the reason is that, in our culture at least, money is often the biggest determinant of what we decide to do with our careers, where we focus our lives, and what we're really trying to be about. And if it is occupying that number one spot, guess what isn't? Other things that I think are a lot more important in life, including that fabric of the universe that we belong to. So it's good to have you here with us. How did you get into this issue around money and the spiritual side of it?
I got interested in stewardship and the connection between faith and finances by going to seminary. It was such an odd experience. But over the summer, before I went to seminary, I realized that this was going to be my first time paying all of my bills alone. And I landed on the seminary campus at Luther Seminary, living in a room the size of a broom closet, thinking, how on earth am I supposed to handle my money? I went to a four-year liberal arts college, and I know nothing about how this is supposed to work. And luckily for me, during the orientation at Luther Seminary, they offered the opportunity to work with a financial coach as part of what you could have from the seminary for free. And that was an invaluable experience to be able to sit down monthly with this person, learn how to budget, learn how to save, and learn how to give generously, all while I was also getting an education in theology, in the languages, in you name it. And so I kind of had this faith and finances thing coming at me side by side from the beginning of my seminary career. And once I got interested in this idea of stewardship, of generosity in the church and how it functions and flows, I kept coming up against this question of how much is enough. I have the belief that everything we have, all that we have, all that we are, has been entrusted to us by God. And so that constantly brings me to the question of how would God have me use what God has entrusted to my care? Which brings me back to this idea of how much is enough for me? How much is enough for my family?
Okay, I'm going to interrupt here and back up to a question that we tend to get wrong all the time, and it has a lot to say about this enough question that has to do with our money. And it's this: your money. Whose is it? To which you probably want to say, well, it's mine, obviously. But the answer is no, it's not your money. You don't own it. The last line of the riddle that Reeve shared with us last week makes that pretty clear. Go back and listen to it. The truth is, as Grace said, everything belongs to God. Now, to understand what that might mean, think about God as that fabric of the universe. Everything is part of the fabric. There is nothing else. And you or I can't add or take away from it. Everything is part of everything else. So your money, it's not yours. But you are in charge of it. It has been entrusted to you. And it is entrusted to you to enjoy, sure, that's fine, and to care for yourself, your family, and others who depend on you, and to share. You're part of God's distribution system, a strand in the fabric connected to all others. Now, there are two ways of seeing the money, wealth, and possessions in your life. You can see yourself as a bucket. You store it up. You have it. You hold it. Or you can see yourself as a pipe. Your money flows through you. You help direct things to where they need to go. Okay, let's go back to Grace.
And which brings me back to this idea of how much is enough for me? How much is enough for my family? And I spent years trying to get at this number, talking to various stewardship experts, trying to get them to say to me, Grace, all you need is $40,000 and the rest of it you can give away and God is okay with you having $40,000 that you've kept for yourself. That's all I wanted.
I think that's in the book of Numbers.
It must be. Yeah. I must have just missed it. And I think, honestly, as someone who loves rules, I was looking for someone to say, here is the dividing line between right and wrong. If you have this much money, it's okay. If you have $1 over, it's not okay. So I could know I checked off a box, followed the rules, and had money that was my own that I could do whatever I wanted with, and the rest of it could be God's. And I think for me, coming back to the question of enough, I've really struggled with this tension of finding the number. And what I began to realize was that it was never about the number. It was about the relationship that I have with my money. Because I found a place of contentment and enough when I was a seminary student that was an entirely different number than the question of contentment and enoughness that I now find as I'm approaching my mid-30s as a person in a partnered relationship. The number is different, but the relationship to my money remains the same.
Another interruption. Grace is right on the money here, so to speak. This is another basic question that we get wrong all the time. We think enough is an amount question. How much is enough? And it's not. no matter how long we try to answer the question of how much money is enough, it will not only escape us, it's also going to torture us. Enough is not an amount question. It is a relationship question. It isn't about how much you have, it's about what your connection to your money is all about. To put it as simply and bluntly as possible, the relationship choice is this. Is your money in charge of you, or are you in charge of your money? Does your money serve you and your biggest, most important values and priorities, or do you serve it and follow society's agenda that goes along with it and the fears of enoughness that money also carries along with it? Okay, back to our conversation. You know, over the years, I've landed on 7 goals that help money play a role in life that provokes a sense of contentment and purposefulness rather than the fear that enough likes to provoke. Let's take a look at them. You know, I think that's really true, that it is never a number. It's not a how much question. It's a relationship question. And that's one of the reasons why when I think about what are my goals for my income, for my money, I try to ask questions that have to do with how I'm handling it, the role that it plays in my life. And I always have these goals for my money, and they're very aspirational. Some of them don't fit everybody. And I also have to say, this is my pitching mound. I don't necessarily expect people to agree with all of them, but consider them and see what you think about them. Here's the first one. It says, to be free from the pull of materialism, learning to be content with what you have instead of discontent because of what you don't have. And I know you see that one a little differently, Grace.
Yeah, I absolutely know where you're going with this, Greg. And I am someone who kind of pushes back when I hear the word materialism, or sometimes it's called capitalism. People put it under that umbrella. And oftentimes people like to put capitalism and materialism on one end of the room and themselves on the other side, as if they could be completely free from the impact of materialism or capitalism. And yet, to me, it's not some sort of enemy that we can separate ourselves from, but rather the water that we swim in every day. So how do we get to a point of contentment when this is the water that we're constantly swimming in? And I love your phrase of free from the pull of materialism. I just wish that contentment could have the first spot, to be content with what we have because we are free from that pull of materialism. And I think the contentment is really the shining star, and that materialism piece of it is always going to be present for us. It's always going to be sitting next to us on that bus. But like you said, it's about disconnecting ourselves from that consistent pull that comes at us all the time.
The second is this: to live debt-free, that's talking about unsecured debt, for the rest of your life so that your income is available to meet your needs. Now, that's a complicated one, and it certainly hasn't been true completely in my life. What's your take on that, Grace?
For some folks out there, that may be difficult to hear. Maybe you are sitting listening to this podcast with credit card debt. Maybe you have the monkey on your back of student loan debt, which is something my husband and I have struggled with for a very long time. And when we see things like this, we immediately feel guilt. And we immediately feel that we'll never have that opportunity. We're never going to get to the place of being debt-free. Is this something that is too high to be attainable? And you kind of want to set everything aside and not even pay attention to the debt and just kind of hope that over time it goes away without you paying attention to it. So I think it's really important that we have this on the list as something that's aspirational. And like you said, Greg, it may not even be true in your life right now. This isn't something that we're holding up as the gold standard that we all need to live into tomorrow, but rather is something that we're moving towards.
Right. And to move towards that, number three can help us do it. So here's number three. To have 3 to 6 months worth of expenses saved so you're not living paycheck to paycheck, and you're prepared for unexpected expenses and transitions that one would have in life. Yeah, that's a hard one. And that's actually very aspirational for a lot of people and simply not realistic for many, many people who are living at very low incomes or just have, because of their own life circumstances, some very high expenses. How do you help people figure out what they should have in savings?
So I think the first thing to start with is having a short-term amount that's set aside. Now, that amount's going to be different for everybody. A lot of financial experts will whip out the $1,000 that you need to have in savings. Certainly, that's a place to start. If you're living as a single person with not a lot of expenses, as I was in seminary, $500 would have worked just fine for me. But having that short-term amount is a good place to begin. And I would work on saving that up as quickly as you can with that extra money that you have outside of your regular expenses that you need to be paying. And then working towards a plan for that 3 to 6 months worth of expenses. Because I think it could become so aspirational that people think they need to focus on saving that up right away. And as we all know, unless there's some sort of windfall coming into your life that's a surprise, this is going to take you a long time to be able to meet some of those goals.
I think it's important too that, you know, you're saying 3 to 6 months worth of expenses, not necessarily what your income is right now. So like, if you didn't have a job or whatever, could you cover what you have to cover for that period of time? And again, you know, if you start putting all these financial goals together that are important, which one do you chase first? And that, you know, can drive you crazy. And there's going to be times of life where you very likely don't have any choice but to live paycheck to paycheck. And then that's okay. You know, I think you just say, oh, I have this priority. I will start working on this other goal when I possibly can. But it's all part of that overall health. And I guess the purpose is to be able to step back and to feel that sense of contentment, to feel like, okay, I you know, this can be enough. This can be enough. This is all I can do right now. And that will be enough, even though you're not able to do this at all right now. Okay. Another one is to save enough money to provide for your retirement. Not 65 sitting by the golf course necessarily. Right? I don't think that's the goal that we're trying to get everybody at, but there's just a time of life where you're not going to be able to work full time anymore. And I think to be humane to ourselves, to know that we are going to be able to take care of ourselves and of one another as we age is an important piece.
And I think especially for younger people, it can be challenging to prioritize retirement savings because, like you said, the idea of being 65 and living by a golf course is just something that I can't really imagine for myself. And I'm guessing many Fabric listeners are kind of feeling disconnected with. I don't have any idea what my life is going to look like in my 40s, in my 50s, nonetheless, in my 60s. How do I begin to imagine and plan for that life? But for me, the reason why I save as a 30-something person is because I want the freedom to be able to choose when I leave the workforce.
I also think it's a stewardship of self issue, because you may get to a point of your life where you say, well, I don't want to leave the workforce, but I don't want it to have to be decided by what I can make money at anymore. Like, I have some skills, I have some gifts, and I want to be able to just do them and not have to worry about being able to get a job at it. So that may be more of a hobby, a passion you have, but it also might mean volunteering. It could be, you know, there's a lot of ways that that can be happening. And the only way you're able to finance that was by thinking ahead. So now a lot of that is really to get at some of these last ideas, because that all maybe sounds very kind of privilege oriented, like I have a lot of money so I can do these things and I'm taking care of myself. But some of these other goals are, here's the number five: to be willing and able to return to God the first 10% of your income and learning to live on the rest. Now, that maybe sounds archaically biblical or something like that, and has God as a, like, God is up there someplace and you're supposed to pay money into God. But one of the reasons I've been entrusted with this is in order to share it with those who need it. So, you know, can I do that with 10%? I mean, do I believe that 10% is the right number? I don't know. I think it's a growth thing for us. And again, it's kind of like your, how much is enough money to earn? How much is enough to have given away? And then I can have the rest. I mean, we're playing games there. So create that tithe, which is, I guess, the technical word for that. Create what you think a tithe is for you in your life right now that you feel good about and you feel responsible to.
And I think it's just like saving. It's something that you can grow over time. I think it's an incredibly exciting opportunity to be able to give money away and see how it can impact the lives of others. Speaking for myself as a person who has experienced a lot of privilege financially and otherwise in their life, I've realized in particular over the last year that this is an area where I need to grow, where I need to be more open to sharing what I have, because what has come into my life isn't just a blessing from on high. There are certain systems that are structured in ways that allow me to earn the money that I have earned and receive the money that I have from family. And so it's imperative that I'm looking outward to my neighbor, just as I'm looking inward and to care for myself and building up those emergency savings for myself and my family. All of those different views of money are important.
One of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of people say, well, when I, you know, make more money, then I'll be more generous. And hopefully that's true. But the correlation tends to be the opposite. People with lower incomes tend to give a larger percentage of their money away than people with higher incomes. It's also a little bit interesting, that word first, or that first 10%. To me, that's key. Because it's making a statement to myself, if nothing else, that before I do the rest, I'm going to give this 10% away, and I'm going to learn to live on the rest. And that's a way of disciplining myself around something that's truly, truly important to me. And there can be times when, as you said, I can't keep that up because of circumstances in my own life and so on, and that's fine. But I'm making that all in my, that statement to myself, that this is the relationship I want to have with my money, and I'm going to create habits. I'm going to create practices that help me keep that priority where I want it to belong. And that's a way of doing that. So yeah, it's important and a hard concept. So another one fits that more spontaneous generosity. And that is number six, to be able to give generously without second thought to other needs, causes, organizations that you believe in and desire to support. And that again is like, am I so tight? Have I filled my life up with kind of wants and maybe manufactured needs to the point where I'm saving and I'm giving this other money away to other organizations on a intentional structure basis, but now I'm so tight that when something comes up, I can't really respond to that. And, so I want to make sure that there's room there for my heart to be moved and to be able to respond. That's another goal. Again, aspirational. This last one sort of adds some perspective to the whole conversation, and that is to use all of your money in ways that reflect your values, build up the lives of others, and are sustainable for the planet. So kind of an overall sense of stewardship of the money that I have. And so whether I'm buying a pizza or saving or donating or who knows what, I feel like, now this is something I believe in. And again, so no false asceticism, no pretending I don't need anything, but recognizing that I'm a real person with real needs, and these are things that I can do.
This is so vital that we consider how God is at work within the midst of all the transactions. Now, that can get a little too detailed sometimes when we're going expense by expense in our bank account. But if you think about those bigger areas where you're spending, so for instance, how could we use our food budget to reflect our values? How might we use that spending to love our neighbor? So some of the things that we've thought about is we recently decided to get some of our groceries through a service that collects discarded groceries, groceries that would have gone to waste otherwise, so that we can purchase those because they're foods that look imperfect that grocery stores may not want. We also decided to, instead of getting takeout from anywhere in town, to really focus on our neighborhood.
There's always a question of reexamining how much money I'm spending and where it's going. But just to, again, to be at peace with overall, like, this is how I handle my wealth and my possessions and everything that is in my life. And I don't know that any of us ever get it right. But I think as long as we continue to being willing to ask ourselves some of those hard questions and experimenting with it, remembering that, yeah, like you said, it doesn't belong to me in the first place. I'm entrusted with it. But how can I steward this best in the world and feel good about the fact that, yes, I do also get to enjoy it and care for myself and my family with it at the same time? I think those are some of the key pieces to it. Grace, something else that I think is really important as we talk about enough in regards to our money is a reflection of this bigger picture of enough and how we try to look for enough. And, you know, and the more we look for it, the further away it gets, and the more impossible it just keeps, it grows as fast as we can approach it. And so last week, as we were talking about enough living, I asked this question about what is enough. and try to help people process that. I've been busy trying to figure it out myself. As I think about enough regarding my money, my wealth, my possessions, the question sharpens a little bit for me. And the question that comes to mind now is, what is it that I'm trying to fill my life with? I mean, if that's what enough is, if enough is when I have enough, I'm finally full, what is it that I'm trying to fill myself with? And I honestly think, it's a human trait in general, but we Westerners have certainly developed a lot of expertise around this idea that somehow I can be enough by earning enough money. And I think that's fundamentally flawed. But so this question, here's the question, I'll just say it again, is what is it that you're trying to fill yourself with? And how's that working for you? You know, my life, one of the things that makes me ask that question is that when I think about enough and money is I immediately go back to when I was just out of grad school and doing an internship, and we all know how interns are paid. And Chris and I were newly married, and we had no money. I remember we lived, our parking lot of our apartment adjoined a Pizza Hut parking lot. And once a week on Sunday nights, we would go and buy one personal pan pizza and share it. That was our discretionary money for the week. And you know what? It was probably one of the happiest times of our life. Now, I don't want to go, you know, and say, hey, all you people that don't think you have enough money, you should be happy you don't have any money. You know, no, I'm not going there at all. But I am saying that earning more money didn't necessarily make us, I mean, we did have enough in the sense that we were cared for. We had a shelter, we had a car, we could put gas in it when we needed to, we could buy groceries as long as we were cheap and careful, and we could buy a personal pan pizza once a week, you know? But it does make me ask that question is, what was I, we weren't filling our lives with money then, and we were finding enough.
Yeah, I share the same experience. I would say other than right now where my husband and I are financially and in the midst of our relationship with our wealth, it was during seminary that I found that time of enoughness. And my personal pan pizza was a Reese's peanut butter cup that once a month I would let myself pick up a Reese's with my grocery necessities and throw that in the cart. And eating that Reese's gave me such immense joy.
So again, it gets down to that relationship question with your money. And I'm thinking for myself, do I want to wait till I get to some mark of how much, some amount before I can feel like I have peace and contentment in my life or not? I would like to hope that my enoughment could be separate from that amount, even if I was drastically pushed backwards. And I know that's got to be really, really hard. And being in a privileged situation, I have a hard time saying that for people who I know are in that situation. But to me, it turns on this thing is, am I trying to fill myself with that money or not? Or is that money simply a tool for me to be able to live out my life? But it doesn't really change my contentment. It doesn't change my peace, my ability to be me, even though it drastically can change the conditions, some of the pain, some of the suffering I might even experience in my life. And I'm not sure how to process all that. Yeah, it's a dangerous thing to start filling those holes of emptiness in our lives with money or the things that money can do. I think intrinsically it's because our money is outside of us, right? I mean, it isn't us, but I'm trying to fill a piece of me with it. And I'm not sure we can do that.
And I think that's the problem. As we keep growing, that next echelon becomes more and more enticing to us. And we think if we can just get there, that will fill in some of these holes in our life that we know can't be filled with something like money, which is just a tool. It is not something that was designed to fill our identity.
Yeah, I don't think we're really filling ourselves. I think what we're doing is we're numbing ourselves. We're distracting ourselves. If I can keep lots of trappings around me, whether it is food, housing, clothes, toys, whatever it is, they distract me, keep me busy, give me the appearances of being successful, of being the person that I want to be, so that I don't actually have to think about, am I the person I want to be?
Yeah, I think oftentimes it comes down to security for many people, that it gives them the idea of security, being surrounded with all of this stuff, being surrounded with all of these different accounts. Really, up to a certain point, as we talked about earlier with those 7 points, I mean, yes, it's helpful to have some sort of emergency savings, but there has to be a point where you can let go and know that certain things can happen that you could never have planned for.
Yeah. When I think about the things that I'd really like security around, it's like, I want my kids to always love me and be in close relationship with me. How much money do I have to earn to do that? Well, I should ask them. They might have a number. yeah. I want my relationship with my wife to be life-giving for me my whole life long. How much money do I need for that? I want what I'm doing with my life to feel meaningful, to feel fulfilling, not just keep me busy, not just be wearing me out. How much money do I have to have that? It doesn't even match. I mean, there's no correlation between those questions and money as an answer to them. But if I distract myself with this idea that, you know, the more I have, the more I can do, the more I can be somehow, it not only isn't answering those bigger questions, but it's preoccupying me so that I don't have the full resource of self to do those things that were more important. Grace, I know you see what you're talking about, not just being good advice, but how you understand the world being put together, what it means to be living in sync with God. And do you see it as what Jesus was trying to show us?
Absolutely. Throughout the Bible, we see so many different ways that Jesus meets people where they are in the midst of their relationship with money. It's not just about Jesus only going to the poor, only going to the rich, only going to those with just $40,000. It's about Jesus meeting you in the midst of that relationship with money and inviting you into an encounter with the role that money plays in your life.
There's got to be some place between this not enough and lots. And the place between it isn't an amount. It's like we've been saying, it's a relationship. It's what does money represent in our lives? What role is it playing for us? I know that there's a lot of talk about money in the Bible, and it's precisely because of what I said before. It's a spiritual issue for us, revealing what's most important in our lives. What parts of the Bible speak to you most profoundly about this?
Yeah, I would say 2 different examples come to mind for me. First, in thinking about where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. I think so often in the personal finance space and in other spaces, we assume that our money will just follow our heart because we are so passionate about it. We're so passionate about the environment. Our money is just going to follow along with it. But one of the insights that Jesus gives to us, I think, is really radical, is illustrating that our money does not always follow our heart. And in fact, we have to be really intentional about it. Going back to those points we talked about earlier, giving first allows us to make sure that our money is following our heart when we care about generosity, because we can get pulled away by so many other things. So I think it's really important that we kind of gear back to this idea Jesus said and look at where our money is going and see what that says about what we actually care about, because we'll be surprised at what we find there. And I think one of the other interesting things is the encounter with the Good Samaritan is one of my favorite stories. One piece of this that the Samaritan is encountering a beaten man by the side of the road and brings all that he has on his person to help this person that he doesn't even know, a person he considered to be his enemy, offering his possessions, offering his time, you name it. And then at the end, offering 2 days' wages. But we often miss the point of that at the end, this Samaritan is offering a blank check for this man's care to the innkeeper. He says, I will come back and repay you whatever more is spent. And that's that kind of spontaneous, kind of life-giving, risking generosity that I think we're all invited into. What would it look like to be able to give with that much abandon? And we might immediately jump in to say, well, how much money do I have to get there? But I don't think that's what Jesus is inviting us to. I think Jesus is inviting us to have a little bit more of a free view in terms of how we are using our money, leaving some space set aside for our neighbor to be used when that neighbor comes along, even if we don't expect that person on the road we're walking on.
To me, one of the key pieces there, if you start looking at some of those things about yourself, saying I'm not in line with those 7 goals at all, I look at my checkbook and it doesn't reflect what I really value at all, you might feel really guilty and say, I need to change this. And just making a little change isn't enough. Then I'd say the fact that your reaction to that is guilt says that you're still dealing with enough in an amount question. And And it's not that maybe that guilt isn't deserving and it's all up to you and stuff like that. I mean, those changes really are needed. Having a more just world economically is hugely important. We all know that. But are you going to be motivated on that by guilt or by true concern for those people? You know, as long as the needs for that are something you're going to force yourself to have to do, like I have to spend 20% less money on myself and I have to give that away. As long as you're doing that from a guilt perspective, you're still playing the enough game. You haven't freed your heart to be where your treasure is. You know, my suggestion would be, who are these people that need your money? Do you know them? Go spend time with them, live with them, walk in their shoes, develop a relationship where there can be empathy on your part, and you'll probably find that it isn't hard to make some decisions in your life. In fact, they will flow freely from your life. Now, maybe that's a little more idealistic than it actually is, but I think that's the right way. I mean, there you're motivated by love. You're motivated by actual concern. You have a purpose, a desire to do something positive with it, not a guilt about doing something negative with your money. And I think that is so key for us. And it reflects, you know, the woven nature of our world that we talk about so much. When we really braid ourselves with one another and with our true selves, who we really want to be, and with this bigger picture of our lives and our world that we call God, then I think a lot of these directions we would hope to move into become positive motivations, things that we just can't wait to do, rather than disciplines that we have to force upon ourselves in order to be a good person, to be able to sleep at night. And, you know, I don't want to put a burden on people and guilt people into doing the right thing with their money. I want to free you up.
I love that. And I think it kind of heads back to that. Yeah. The questions of guilt and shame. Oftentimes when people are running into the, what is enough, you know, financially question with a guilt lens, the question they're often asking isn't, do I have enough money? It's, am I enough? Especially if they've gone through a financial trauma. Maybe a lot of times I hear the story of people who get credit cards in college and overspend on those credit cards and end up paying off that debt for years. And that guilt and shame that they have over a decision that they made when they were all of 18 years old follows them throughout their life with money, and they can't let it go. And the amount of money they make will never make them feel enough because they're still carrying that guilt from being an 18-year-old who saw a table in the quad and took up a credit card. You have to be able to deal with some of those financial mistakes and the guilt and shame behind them before you can often move forward into these other steps.
And I want to let our listeners know that that kind of help is available for them in lots of places, but certainly right here. You can contact us at Fabric and we will be happy to get you connected to someone who can help you walk through those difficulties of that you feel personally, internally, but also stepping towards getting into a budget that will help you discover what enough might be in your life. As I said before, money is a highly spiritual issue, surprisingly to some people. And the biggest spiritual tool we have is called a budget, and it can do wonders. But all of that is still playing games with enough until we start looking inside ourselves and facing the big questions about what am I trying to fill my life with? And having a sense of what contentment, what peace, what enough might be with how much you have or how little you have and however you happen to see that. Thank you, Grace. You have such a open heart and spirit around this, and you're helping us wrap our hands around enough in this world of money, wealth, and stuff. It's just very, very good. So thank you.
It was my pleasure. I had so much fun having this conversation with you, Greg, and knowing that this conversation will be made more public to the Fabric community. I just want to encourage all of you that you can do this. If money feels like the scary monster in the closet, it's okay. You can open the door and begin slowly working on this relationship. And you have so many resources at Fabric to help you do this work. Don't let any shame or guilt get in the way of you taking some steps forward in your financial life, because it will have an impact on every other area of your life as well.
Right. You can figure out the question of enough without having enough money. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
So this week, as you consider this question of what is it you're filling your life with and how's that working for you, I want you to also to just remember why this is such an important question. And that is, when we don't understand what enough is in our lives, it makes us do and be and try to have things that really don't matter. And it does it at the expense of things that do matter. Join us next week as I talk with Nick Tyson about enough comfort. And we'll be taking that big question about what we're doing with enough in our lives to a whole new level.
For this conversation to have all the richness it could, share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. We always love hearing from you through our contact page or on social media. And if you want to share those more personal thoughts about enough and what it is in your life, email those directly to Greg at enough@fabricmpls.com. It's worth this quick reminder that who you are is enough. We may not often feel it, but that's part of the reason we do this together. Life woven together.